Blog Talk Radio.
Hello. Hi. Welcome to Travel Advice. Hi. Today's April 2nd, 2007, and hope everybody's doing well out there and enjoying their travels or getting ready to plan their travels. I'm Chris Newton, one of the co-hosts, and my other co-host is Jerry Fuller. It's a pleasure being with you, Jerry.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, it's very good, and I'm really excited about the topic today also.
All right. The topic today is age of exploration. Anybody traveling over the 50-year-old mark, and so we're gonna talk about that and try to give some good advice for people that are actively planning during that time. But Jerry, you've been traveling pretty well, you know, in the last 10, 15 years or so.
Yes. Actually, the funny thing about it, I have found that my traveling since I turned 50, which is 13 years ago, that I travel differently than I used to. Not that 50 was a magic number, but I used to travel more, what's the word, fast, much faster, and not as detailed, and not stay places as long. And I find that I have traveled a little differently now. I don't run myself as stupid as I did when I was younger, because I don't know why. But the thing that is fascinating about traveling when you're older is a lot of people are a little afraid to try something different, for example, adventure, and that's what we're calling the age of exploration, and for people to go out and explore the world on this segment. And basically, there are several things that a person who wants to do some different adventure, exploratory type of travel, needs to consider. And some of them are budget and how much money they want to spend on it. Because you can go from very expensive all the way up to extremely expensive into the tens of thousands on little trips under 1,000 in many cases. And you can also have to consider your limits, your health, your interest, your time, in the sense of if you are the type. See, my wife, when she travels, she will go and stay as long as it takes in a place to see and do everything there, because she doesn't plan on going back. She does sometimes, but she acts as though she's never going back. So she wants to do everything the first time. And I travel, I want to do one or two things the first time, and then I'll go back and do something else. You have to determine what type of traveler you are and what your physical ability is. I mean, not everybody can climb Kilimanjaro, for example, although I did it when I was 62 and also did it when I was about 28, but it's maybe not younger than that, maybe 26. And I had no problem whatsoever physically, because they go slowly and it takes 4 days up. So it depends. You don't have to be really strong and have the shape to do it. But you need to consider those things when you do adventure travel. And by adventure travel, or exploratory travel, it's doing things that you normally wouldn't do to learn more about the world and to broaden your perspective and scope. And I just want to mention a couple of things. There's programs like Hella Hiking in the Rockies in Canada. This is a magnificent way to do it. You just fly in, rather than take days to go into the higher areas, like here in Utah, we have what we call the High Uintas, and it, some of them you have to take days to hike in to the beautiful areas where the valley, high valleys and beautiful lakes and all this, and you don't have to do it. You can, they put you in a helicopter, and they fly you there. And you go over into the magnificent mountains, and the sights are spectacular, indescribable. And you can hike on four or five different areas in a day, depending on what you're seeing and where you are, what part of the Rockies you are. Most of them are in either B.C., British Columbia, or Alberta. That's where they do them. And fabulous. Another thing that if you're into hiking, and do you know there are such different levels of hiking. For example, even in climbing Kilimanjaro, we did the Rongai route, R-O-N-G-A-I, and the fellow that went with me was 50, and I was 62, and we did the Rongai route because it took 4 days to climb it. And I will tell you, the actual height to this Kibo Hut, which is over 16,000 feet, was not bad. I mean, it was not bad. Anybody could do it. We even saw one person that had a cane that walked it, and it is not that bad. There's one or two little areas, but the guys will help you over it. And so there are all kinds of hiking, different levels of hiking, and it's very healthy, and it's a way to really explore a small area. And we've talked earlier in another show about backpacking, and you can do backpacking or hiking on different, like 1 day, 2 days, a month, 3 months. So the hiking, even in the Himalayas, I've been to the Tibet and into Nepal to go hiking several times, maybe 10 times total, and some of them are very easy. I mean, we're talking any age can do it as long as you can walk. It's almost flat, well, hilly, but it's not hard at all. And the only thing you have to worry about is the elevation, because you're many times 8, 10, 12,000 feet in elevation to hike this. But with that exception, with your heart and things. But with that exception, it's not bad. And also, people who like to golf, golf different places. You can go to Ireland. I mean, everyone's heard of golfing in Scotland, but some have not heard maybe about Ireland. And I know you spent, Chris, time in Ireland. And did you see any of the golf courses while you were there?
I did. I stayed right next to maybe like a 10-minute walk away from a golf course in Ireland, kind of right by the Atlantic Ocean, kind of right on the coast there. And it was so beautiful. And it was very inexpensive, too. It was a local course, you know, just a city-run course. But it was this amazing course for just being kind of in the middle. It was kind of in the middle of nowhere. It's a small little village. But, yeah, there's some real good gems that no one, you know, they're not touristy or just like in the small towns there. And, they're not the famous ones. Yeah, I've been to St. Andrews up in Scotland, and that was like very expensive to get on and to play the St. Right. Andrews course up in Scotland. Right. But the smaller ones, yeah, are a real good deal, I think, because you can, and then you can meet some of the locals too. I golfed with a local, you know, who wanted to tag along, and I learned so much from that person, you know, about the area, and you know, they could tell right away I had my accent, and they had their accent, and the golf courses are fantastic in those areas, and I lost so many balls though.
Did you lose the balls in the water? In the ocean?
I did. Yeah, it was very treacherous for losing balls. Yeah, I lost a lot of balls. But, yeah, it was a great time, though. But and a pub and a restaurant wasn't too far away either from the golf course, so that was nice to do that.
You can recover the pain at the pub for losing all the golf
course. Yeah, you lost all your balls. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's amazing. all the places in the world that have golfing, and you don't have to go to the famous places. So if you're into golfing, it's amazing, all the way from Hawaii and New Zealand and all over the world. Not all over the world, but many places you wouldn't consider. And another thing that's really kind of fun, if you want to broaden, if you've never done it, is whitewater rafting. Mm-hmm. And there's all kinds of levels. Bill Dvorak rafting, river rafting, located in Colorado, and I think he spells it D-V-O-R-E-K, Dvorak. It may be AK, D-V-O-R-A-K, Bill, kayak and whitewater. They have all kinds of levels, and for all ages. So, I mean, older people can do it. It's fantastic, and many of them do through the Colorado rivers and many rivers in the west. And now one thing that's kind of fun, and many older people have taken it up, is bicycling. And this bicycling is very different, I mean, as far as options. You can be bicycling in huge mountains and hilly areas that you've got to be powerfully strong and tuned for it. But there are areas all over Europe and even in Canada and the United States that older people go on these tours, bicycling tours, and stay in all level, probably some chateaus in Europe, down to B&Bs here in America, all kinds of programs. So you can do it at any level you want. But there's one thing. That a great friend of ours who is in his early 70s, he had been in Europe and several times in the 40s. And he discovered a thing called Via Ferrata, V-I-A-F-E-R-R-A-T-A, Via Ferrata. I had never really heard of it. I mean, my wife had, because she has studied, she's interested in World War I and World War II, and is developed in Europe as a way to get over the mountains. And it's mountain climbing, sort of like on a ladder type thing. It's very unique, and they have many places of any category. And young people, I mean, teenagers can, and people in their 70s can easily do it. He did it, and it's hard, but it was not doable. And there's only one place in North America that I know of you can do it, and that's in Kentucky. And it's a fantastic sport. I've never seen it, but he loved it. And so he said he'd recommend, when I talked to him about this show, he said, I highly recommend it to anybody that likes heights, because you have to climb this mountain. It's almost like rappelling in a way, but it's not. It's safe. He said, anybody can do it as long as you're not terrified of heights. And you don't have to be super strong or anything.
And that sounds interesting. Yeah.
Pardon?
And that sounds very interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, you can look it up, and if you're interested in Via Ferrata, and it's really fascinating. And there's a company that's called Elder Trek, E-L-D-E-R-T-R-E-K-S, Elder Trek. And they're in Canada, and they do trips all over the world, primarily for people age 50 and older. All kinds of things, from hiking and whitewater rafting to, well, you just name it, all kinds of things. It's bizarre. The things that they do, they spend time in every continent in the world doing all kinds of exploration type of things that normally people wouldn't do unless they have that kind of an interest. So it's there are just so many options. I know my mother and dad truly love to go out and do things that most people would want to do. They're interested in many things, but one thing is they like to go to where their ancestors were. Now, this a lot of people who are getting older are anxious to know their roots, where they came from. And the genealogical background is becoming very, very popular for everybody because they want to know. And my dad would just go to the homes and the areas where his ancestors came from in England and in Germany and near Rotterdam, in Holland, Netherlands, and all over, because he wanted to photograph and to see their graves and things like that. And this is becoming extremely popular. I know my wife, her dad was born and raised in the Netherlands, and her grandparents came from Wales. So she has spent a lot of time in these countries, just fascinated with it. She's 63. They'll be in another month. But she's been doing this for 5 years now and fascinated with it. So the adventure exploration can do anything, anything that you normally don't do. I'm sorry, Chris, you were saying?
Yeah, I actually took my father a few years ago, and we went to Belgium, and he's like 58, and that's where our family originated from, a lot of our ancestors. Uh-huh. And we had some of our family there, and it was a great experience. Having my father there too, and it was pretty neat to see the different generations, you know, but it was a good adventure for him because he would have never thought of doing that. But I'm the one that kind of got him to go. Kind of, you know, I was like, come on, you gotta come to Belgium, you know. And yeah, but
and when he got there, he was excited. He did, wasn't he?
He was. He had probably the best. It changed his life, I think, because he's never been. That was like his second or third time leaving his country, and he felt. Yeah, I could tell he's changed quite a bit after that trip. Yeah, he's a lot more internet. He likes different types of food now, more different types of cuisine and
really?
And drinks and everything. Yeah, he's opened up a lot. Yeah, it was great. I saw the transformation with him. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, now you're thanking your dad at home.
Yeah.
But, you know, a lot of people we know, because most of the people we hang around with are over 50, like to, how do I explain this? They will get a theme and go someplace. Well, we do it. My wife and I do it. Well, we read the book, Bridges, The Bridges of Madison County. Did you ever hear of that movie?
I have. I've heard of it. Yeah. Okay.
Well, we were, we thought, we didn't know they had covered bridges in Iowa. We only thought they had the covered bridges back in New England. So we
right, in Vermont or,
Yeah, back up there. And so we just got on the plane that weekend, the next weekend, sorry, and we flew to Des Moines, rented a car and drove about an hour or so southwest and toured the covered bridges and then flew home. We were there about 2 days.
Oh, nice.
Fascinating. And it broadens your idea of life by getting a theme and following it. Even on our honeymoon, we chose Nova Scotia and Newfoundland. I mean, sorry, Nova Scotia and PEI, Prince Edward Island, because my wife's favorite book is Anne of Green Gables. So we flew over there and went to her home and bought the book and read the book and followed it through PEI and went into Nova Scotia. And the whole honeymoon, the basis of the honeymoon, rather than just the honeymoon part, was the book.
Excellent. Oh, that's a great way to do it. Oh, nice. Yeah. I like the theme. I like the theme aspect because it kind of keeps you on course almost a little bit there. Yeah.
Well, you know, one way to really explore a country and a very different way of doing it, I mean, Great Britain is a magnificent place to do it. And so, well, all the world is, but particularly Great Britain, because it's home to so many authors and playwrights and poets. And
we've
gone over there numerous times and done the poets of the Lake District, for example, those and the writers of the Lake District who inspired, who lived there, and see their homes and wander around in the fog, in the morning mist and things. And all over the world we have done that. And we were down in Chile and went to a super famous home. He won a Nobel Peace Prize, and they made a movie. The Postman was written by him.
Oh, yeah.
I remember in Italian, the name in Italian or Spanish, but the Postman in Latin, Spanish or Italian. And the author is from Chile, just southwest of Santiago on the ocean. And we went and turned
his
home. I can't remember his name.
Famous. Hey, Jerry, it looks like we have a caller. Jerry, it looks like we have a caller. There, I'll catch
right.
him. Okay. Hello. Hi there.
Hi. This is Mary. I would like
Hi, Mary. Hi.
Yeah, I would like to get some information on tours to Europe for the senior citizens, say people around in their early 70s, late 60s, early 70s. I wondered if you could tell me about some tours to Europe for those people.
Well, we can. There's hundreds of ways to do it, and I really mean hundreds of ways to do it for anybody over the age of 50 and 60 and 70. As I talked a little bit earlier about being aware of your physical shape, in other words, if you like to walk a lot. See, what most people don't realize is, have you been to Europe before?
Yes, I have.
And maybe you've been to some of the museums and things, and you can just stand forever in line at museums and waiting to see, like, the Mona Lisa or something. Now, some people can't stand very long, for example, or some people can't walk very far. Are you in great physical shape?
I'm not in great physical shape, but I'm in pretty good physical shape.
Very good. So you'll be able to do it. Now, there are several ways you can do it. A lot of people, for example, will take a boat down the Rhine River for 1 week or up to 2 weeks, and see that the Netherlands and Germany and maybe into Switzerland or Strasbourg in France, depending on where the boat ends where you're taking. And that's a great way to do it if you don't, you just aren't able to do a lot of walking or standing. It's a great way to do it. Another way that you might want to do is, now I'm going to talk about some tours, land tours. Now, most tours, but let me give you an idea of how to judge it. Many tours are very quick. In other words, you can see like six countries in 14 days. You've read about those?
Yes, I've heard about them, and that doesn't appeal to me.
No, I'd rather die myself. I think that's horrible beyond description. Now, and but you can find even with many companies, such as even tours like Globus Gateway, and Insight International, some of the more popular tours that are not super expensive, they will have slower-paced trips that are designed more for older people and people that want more in-depth or who maybe want to rest a bit. In other words, they may have 1 week just in Switzerland, and you may just stay one or two places in Switzerland that whole week. Or they may spend 2 weeks in, like, Switzerland and Austria, and or just in Italy, 2 weeks in Italy. So they do offer those programs which are not rushed. You'll stay 3 or 4 days in a place rather than one night or two nights. So that's an option which will give you a chance to slow down. Now, there are some companies that are very, very exclusive and quite expensive, like Exeter, E-X-E-T-E-R, Exeter Tours.
Yeah.
They offer tours mainly to Eastern Europe. They're very, very much paid for older clients. And as a result, I mean, but they're expensive. You stay in most magnificent chateaus and palaces and things like that. So they're an experience of a lifetime, but they might be $10,000 for a 10-day trip, something like that,
uh-huh.
per person. And that they're exquisite. That, and if you want to really look at you, I'm not being nosy, but if you that kind of price doesn't send you too badly, go into their website, Exeter. I think it's Exeter International,
uh-huh.
but Exeter Tours, and look at those. Because if you want to do Eastern Europe, that is a very good way to do it. If you want that kind of money, because they take you into private showings and they take you into museums and rooms that you cannot go any other way. Something else. There are some, make sure that the tour, now these are some things to look for. Make sure that the tour bus that you're going to be using has a restroom on it. That's very important, that the company will say their tour buses have a restroom. And I would recommend, and I don't think, well, my wife will disagree with me on this, but I would recommend getting a tour under 20 passengers.
Oh.
Under 20. The reason why is because a lot of times when we get older, and I know this is true with me, my hearing is not as good. And sometimes, and I don't, and I want to wander around and look at things a little more. And what happens if you get a tour that has like 35, 38, 40 people on it, a busload, you go into a museum or you go into a castle or you go somewhere, and you either can't hear them, the guide, or you're too far away that you can't see what they're showing. Because there's so many people there.
Uh-huh.
And it can be very, very frustrating. And my wife doesn't care because she's very aggressive, and she just muzzles her way right to the front. And she sees everything that she wants, and I'm a little bit embarrassed to just start elbowing up there. But you may want to consider the smaller size tours, particularly if you have a hard time seeing or hearing.
I see.
Because that can be very, very awful. Because you just can't get in there and see it if there's 35 people.
Uh-huh.
But you're going to pay more money because the smaller the – you have to pay for that bus, whether there's 40 people on it or 10, and they'll charge you more money. But it's well worth it because you get a chance to do things better. And when you go to restaurants for lunch, I think you don't have to wait as long, and it's not as awful for you. You have so many people and wait for the serving and that kind of thing. And they also, in most cases, offer a better variety of food, and it's just better. Now, another thing that you may want to consider doing is do an FIT tour. We talked about that a couple of weeks ago on the different kinds of tours. FIT tour is basically do your own thing, and that's where you just arrange it the way you want. You prepare the hotel you want. You have them pick you up at the airport or train station, and you'll get maybe a one-city tour or have a private driver for a day to do what you want. For example, if you are going to an area that you're very interested in and you want to stay a whole lot of time looking at some historical points, or you want to follow the Mary Queen of Scots through Scotland, for example, or some of you want to go down to Pompeii and you want to stay 2 days in Pompeii because you're very, very interested in Pompeii, you may want to go FIT and just have a driver. And that way you won't pay for anything that you won't want, and you will be able to stay as long as you want, because I know, as I mentioned earlier in the program, that as we get older, we want to stay longer in places, in most cases. We used to go faster and didn't worry about it so much, but we do worry about it now, and we like to stay longer, a day or two longer. Have we? Uh-huh. And did that help answer it? And we're not through talking. If you don't want to, we can talk as long as you would like. Do you have any, am I on the right direction of what you'd like?
You know, I like the idea of a more middle price appeals to me, and then the smaller groups appeals to me. Mm-hmm. And another thing I'd like to know about is, like, what time of the year? Like, I'm thinking specifically of southern Spain, the Alhambra, in that area.
Right. Uh-huh.
And I was wondering, like, is fall and how late in fall and things like that?
Well, Spain, particularly the southern Spain, is good probably about 8 months out of the year. You can start going in April with no problem, and you can go up until probably the first part of November. My favorite time to go is I like May 15th to about June 15th,
uh-huh.
and I like the month of October, Spain. Uh-huh. And the crowds are not as bad, and the weather is cooler. The weather in the days often is in the 70s. The nights, depending on where you are, can be in the 50s. You might, if you like warmer weather, might have a sweater for the evening, a light jacket or something. But I would go in October.
Uh-huh.
I like it. Or May through the first part of June. That's an ideal time to go.
Uh-huh. And for that time in southern Spain, about how many days would you recommend for that area, like a week or something, or what?
Well, that's hard to answer, but I'll give you some ideas, okay, some clues.
Okay.
The reason I say it's hard to answer because you could spend 2 months in southern Spain and not do and see it all, particularly if you include all the way from, like, Ciudad Real and Sevilla, all the way over to Barcelona and to the central area over all the way to the Pyrenees. You could spend months there and not do it all. But if you're just going to do Malaga and that part and on up to the Alhambra, as you mentioned, and work your way over to Barcelona, let me give you this. I would not go to Barcelona unless I had at least a minimum of 4 nights. You need 4 nights in Barcelona.
Uh-huh.
Because there are so many historical, interesting, fascinating things to do. And especially if you don't run around fast, you'll want more time. Right in the old part of Barcelona, by the cathedral and where the Spanish Inquisition headquarters were, and where Christopher Columbus came back to, all of this area, you'll want to spend a whole day. Because the cathedral and the old buildings and museums are fascinating. And then you'll want to spend time up in Montserrat. It's maybe an hour drive in the mountains out of Barcelona.
Uh-huh.
And that's a fabulous monastery, just absolutely fabulous. And the Black Madonna is there, and it's just really neat. So, I mean, you could spend 3 full days in Barcelona, and you really need it. And then the Alhambra, you can actually see the Alhambra. Well, it depends on your interest. But you can walk through and see and enjoy the Alhambra in 2 hours.
Oh, really?
You can do it in 2 hours. Now, a lot of people will take half a day, and they'll want to sit and watch and look and absorb the gardens and things. But it's not that big. I mean, it is big, but it's not that big. 2 hours, you can do it and not be super, super rushed, not running. But because you mentioned it, you'll probably want more time because of your interest in it. Some people have never heard of it, or they've read about it somewhere, and they run in there and see it in an hour and a half, 2 hours, and they've seen it, but they haven't experienced it. So you may want to allow half a day there. Now, if I were going to that part of the country, I would want to go over, it's not too far, maybe a couple of hour drive from the Alhambra, maybe three. I'd go to Ciudad Real. It's halfway between Madrid and Sevilla. And spend maybe 3 days over there and do a Don Quixote tour. You can go to the very places. You know Don Quixote,
yes.
Man of La Mancha?
Yes.
It was all written right there. Cervantes wrote it all right there. And you can go see the windmills. You can see every place that was inspired him to write this book.
Oh.
And if you're interested in Man of La Mancha or Don Quixote, you should read it before you go, or see the movie at least, and see the one with Peter O'Toole. That is the most fabulous interpretation. It's really the most real interpretation I've ever seen of the book.
Uh-huh.
But it's a musical, but it's good. And I would spend at least 3-4 days there. Just going around, because not only do you see the countryside, because you will cover approximately a radius of maybe 100 miles, and you'll see a wide variety of countryside, but you'll meet a lot of interesting people, rural country people. And it's a wonderful place to go. And maybe what you might do is you might fly to Sevilla or to Madrid, and you can maybe do an FIT because you want to do special things, or you can call contact like Globus Gateway or Insight International, and just do one of their Spanish tours, okay? And take a 1-week Spanish tour of Spain, and then extend it. Get an overview of Spain if you've never been, and then if they get one that includes Alhambra, if possible, and maybe Barcelona and that area you'd like. But if you say look at the itinerary and say, you know, that's not all I want to do, then rent 2 days of a driver and do an FIT and have them drive you around to the places you want to spend time in.
Oh, that's wonderful.
So you can mix and match things. And they also have a super fast train that goes from Madrid to Sevilla. So you may want to include that in it. So there's some, and of course, while you're down there, you have to go to the Rock of Gibraltar because it's so famous. And not that it's that great, not that huge of a rock, but it's famous, and it's, you need to see it if you're in that part of Spain. And that needs to be, you need at least one night there. So get there one morning, for example, spend the night in Gibraltar area, and then leave the next afternoon. And you can see the cage, you can see all of Gibraltar. So does that give you any ideas?
Yes, it does. And you've given me a few of the things I knew about. I haven't seen, but I knew about. But you've given me a lot of other information. Now, something else I want to know. Do you, if you were to go to some of those areas, do you find many people who know English? Like, I don't know Spanish.
Yes. Yes. Almost everybody either speaks some English or you can fake it. I have never... I don't think I'm lying. I've been to Spain more than 70 times. And I don't think I've ever had a problem with language in Spain.
Oh.
I have always found somebody that spoke some English, and by playing pantomime or something like that, you can do it. And I mean, even in restaurants, what I do all over the world is I don't speak just French and English and Hebrew, but I go all over the world, and I will go to a restaurant that there are people eating, and I will look at what I get the waiter, and I say, come with me. I put, move my little finger, like, follow me, and I look whatever looks edible that people have ordered, and I don't know what they're eating necessarily, but if it looks edible, then I say, I just point at it, and I say, I want that, and that it looks like something I can eat, because some places you don't know what you're getting, and you can do that in Spain. But I rarely, rarely, rarely have had a problem in Spain. I've always been able to communicate, always. If they don't speak it super well, there will be somebody in the village. There'll be somebody there that can speak it better, and they'll take you to them.
Okay, now one other thing.
Yeah.
Would you recommend going to the museum in Madrid, the Prado?
The answer is yes, I would. And if you want my honest opinion... You can get a guide there, or you can rearrange at your hotel, have them arrange a guide that knows it, because it is very, it isn't that big. If you've been to some of the major ones, like the Hermitage or the Louvre, or some of the major famous ones, the Metropolitan Art Museum in New York, they're not that big of a museum per se. But the reason you go there primarily is to follow the life of El Greco. And you go to the different rooms, there's different stages. And if you don't know about it, the museum can be a little bit dull because much of the artwork there, in my opinion, is very, I say, depressive. It's very dark. And it's people that you've never heard of. And it's good, don't get me wrong. But if you don't know what you're seeing, you're going to miss 95% of it.
Oh, I see.
I would get a guide because they will take you to the different levels, there's two stories. And each of the rooms, like the, on the beginning where they will take you, is his early stages. And then he has, and they'll show you where he's done pictures. It's brilliant what he does. He has a, like there's one painting where he's some royal family, and he's painting the kids and the parents. And but there's a mirror in the background, and he's actually painting him in there, the reflection of him painting them. Uh-huh. So you get a self-portrait of him, and you would never know that if you didn't have the guide point that out to you.
I see.
So, and then the last stage, his darkest period, which is upstairs, I don't like at all. It's black and depressing. And, of course, I think, if I remember right, he went crazy or something. But anyway, it's very different. And you need somebody to tell you, yes, you need to do it. And you can do that tour with a guide in probably 2 hours.
Oh, well, that's wonderful.
But you must have a guide, and the hotel will arrange one. Or you can even get them at the museum if they're not out of the guides. But you want a private guide. You don't want to be with a bunch of people on that signature.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, thank you, Mary, for calling there. And, Jerry, it looks like we're almost out of time here.
Oh, well, Mary?
Yes.
You can call us back next week, or you can email us.
Yes.
Or I can give you a phone number if you want.
Okay.
Or you can call us direct after. You can call us at 801-721-4341. And that will be my phone, and we'll talk more, okay?
Okay, thank you very much.
Yeah.
Pardon me?
Thank you for calling, Mary. Yeah.
Yes, you're welcome, and I appreciate it. Thank you.
Oh, anything.
Oh, yeah, thank you.
Okay,
yeah,
goodbye.
That's great.
Goodbye.
Okay, bye-bye.
Goodbye.
Mm-hmm. Goodbye.
All right. Well,
okay, Jerry,
about Australia.
Australia, yeah. Next Monday, and... that was great. I appreciate it, Jerry. And until next week. And by the way, you can email at traveladviceshow@traveladvice.com, and feel free to email any questions you have.
Yeah, the reason I wanted Mary to call is because there's some things that we specifically have to talk about if
right.
you're listening that we didn't go into detail. That I think that email won't quite do it, but we'd prefer you to email if possible, because that way we can give you more detail in writing so
okay.
you can have a copy. Well, thanks so much.
Yeah, thank you, Jerry. Until next week, we'll talk about Australia.
Yes.
Okay.
See you later.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay, Jerry. Bye. Bye-bye.
Okay, thanks, man. Thanks for letting me do it. Nice to meet you. Yeah, Chris. Charles? Cool, man. Yeah, I'll email you a link to the show and stuff. And it'd be interesting to see what you think. Yeah, and we'll probably do an Indian one soon. You know, I like to do a good Indian show, you know, and give people different options. And we kind of talk about really unique places, you know, like kind of unique destinations. Or, yeah, you know, kind of off the norm, you know, and not like the tourist kind of areas.
There are a lot of tourist areas.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Cool, man. Cool. Well, I got a cruise, but yeah, thanks. But yeah, I have a class at 4:30, right before the show. So.
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, so I got to like.